Hello and welcome to another edition of the Extra Time podcast. Today is part 5 of our Rugby World Cup special. My name's Steve Luckins. I'm the senior sports editor here at The National. Joining me, as ever, is my great colleague, Paul Radley, one of our senior reporters. Paul, how are you?
Not too bad, Steve. Bearing in mind, the weekend rugby performances by our brave boys.
Yeah, have the tears stopped yet?
Just about, although it's still pretty raw, I must say.
Well, there's enough to cover in all that, and I guess we should probably start with the future, or the speculation surrounding the future of England's coach Stuart Lancaster. Now, there's a pretty meaningless game coming up against Uruguay. It must be pretty hard to pick up the troops for a dead rubber like that. But how do you see it panning out for him? Do you see him still being at the helm for the Six Nations?
I think he could well be, actually. Whether he should be is another debate. There seems to be lots of people. In actual fact, last time when the job became available, when Martin Johnson went there, a lot of people, similar people, putting their names up for up for the job. Jake White, who's been over here commentating on OSN, Eddie Jones, his big friend, they both intimated that they wouldn't mind a crack at the England job, and they did exactly the same 4 years ago. Bear in mind how bleak England's performance was. They seem like an attractive proposition to me. Lancaster, very likable. Has he got a proven track record to show that England should, presumably 4 more years of faith in him? I think you can only say that he hasn't really.
No, I think it's a fair enough argument to say that since the 2011 World Cup, there's been progress, but certainly not at the rate that most England fans would accept. Every second place finish in the Six Nations, obviously becoming the first host nation to be eliminated from the Rugby World Cup at the group stage. Do you think, you've obviously mentioned some names there, how far reaching, or rather how appealing is this England job, bearing in mind the performance that they've put up so far?
I thought it was very appealing, given the amount of money whoever comes into the job will be offered. I'd have thought they'd be the most well-paid coach in the world game. There's lots of resources that in terms of playing and everything else, really. That means it's so long as they've got a clear vision and they think they can do it. You'd have thought progress, certainly from where England are. They've never been this low ever in the history of the game. You'd have thought progress wouldn't be too difficult to come by, whether it's the sort of progress that would match up to the supporters and everybody else's expectations. Obviously that's a little bit more of a jump, but England really couldn't get much. Well, they couldn't get any worse than this.
No. Well, I mean, it's done and dusted now in terms of who's going through. All that's left to decide is who goes through as group winner out of Wales and Australia. One man that Australia will be missing, and let's be honest, he was absolutely epic against England, is Michael Hooper. He was cited I know you've got some thoughts on it. It was a very dangerous tackle trying to clear Mike Brown out. How do you view that, the 1 week suspension?
I thought it was bad at the time. I thought he was lucky to stay on the field. Whether it would have made too much difference to the outcome, who knows? And obviously Australia were very deserving winners in the end, so it would have skewed it had they gone down to 14 men at that stage. But I did think at the time that it was a bad bit of foul play. It seemed very deliberate. No one's just a shoulder barge straight to Mike Brown's head, which was, certainly was deserving of at least the yellow card at the time. And you don't like to see players, especially players as great as Hooper, miss any time for major tournaments like this. But I think week is bare minimum for the issue that it was. But then it seems as though there's no rhyme or reason as to the length of bans and who's getting banned this tournament, because some people have got off scot-free when it looks like they've done similar things to what other people have got, 5 week banned for or things like that.
And I mean, just for some of our listeners who may not be overly familiar with the laws, the whole reason we're having this debate is, and you can point to Aaron Farrell, you know, Aaron Farrell, Sam Burgess could have quite easily gone if Farrell hadn't, but Farrell was sin-binned for not using his arms, or at least attempting to use his arms, and that's what Hooper has essentially got away with. Like you said, he's gone in with his shoulder, no attempt to clear the guy out cleanly using his arms. But I mean, he's, you know, and there are serial offenders in the world game, and the biggest one for me is Sonny Bill Williams. He's made a career out of shoulder barges. He kind of prides himself on that immovable object. And yet, you know, he's lauded for these block-busting tackles, and no one ever seems to, you know, pay a blind bit of notice that he's not actually trying to attempt to tackle people.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously guys that tackle that way and make those big hits that earn a lot of acclaim for them in the other country, obviously from rugby league, like Sonny Bill Williams, Sam Burgess, I think you just mentioned him there, with similar, that it seems like they go in to hit people high and they hit them so hard that they could plead the defence that they don't have, because they knock them back so quickly, they don't have the time to wrap them up and get their arms round, whether that's a valid excuse for
it's
not,
isn't
so.
It's going largely unpunished, and it's not even like that's not a law in rugby league. You know, it's like you said, they get a lot of acclaim for these big hits, for sending, you know, equally big monsters falling on their backsides. But you know, it's a real issue here, and I guess, you know, there's been this issue with quite a few New Zealand players. I guess Richie McCaw being the most obvious example of a getting away with murder at the breakdown and stuff. And I guess the All Blacks have this mystique almost that I guess a lot of referees can get sucked into.
Yeah, the unpunishable Richie McCaw. Yeah, you know, I think you're right. There's a lot of things that, like, if you look at punishments that are meted out, retrospectively, if you talk about the Hooper sighting, his ban only being 1 week, would that have been more if it was a player from a lesser nation who wouldn't have been, as their absence wouldn't have been noticed so much, and they wouldn't have been quite so conspicuous if they were missing for a couple of weeks? If you look at a lot of the statistics and the bans that have been meted out, I think there's a case to argue that is the case, that the players from the lesser known nations are treated more harshly than the stars of who everybody's sort of paying their money to see. But whether, obviously, that's not fair.
So the lineup for the quarterfinals is looking pretty finalised, Paul. I guess the only slot left to fill really is runner-up in Pool B. Samoa face Scotland on Saturday. A win will take Scotland through. Yes, purely on the bonus points. That will make the United States versus Japan game the following day redundant. Who do you see going through? Scotland going to make it, or Japan? Eddie Jones, is Japan going to make it a fairy tale run through to the knockout stages?
Scotland look like they're in pole position at present, given how poor Samoa have been to this point in the competition. However, obviously, like you said, it'd be a fairy tale and a real heartwarming story for rugby in general.
Japan have taken, you know, with the host going out, Japan are definitely got the backing of England now, would you say?
They become the neutral favourite if they weren't already. Absolutely. It would just be a great story for rugby in general. Obviously, we live over here, and for Asian rugby, it would be superb. And looking ahead to the next World Cup, it would obviously, hopefully, provide a massive injection of interest for that, which wasn't actually always a given. But apparently the Japanese matches since they beat South Africa in this competition have been breaking all sorts of viewership records on TV over there. Apparently there's 25 million people watched their half fixture, which has got to be fantastic sport.
Excellent. Okay, Paul, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Steve.
That's all we've got time for this week. This Rugby World Cup podcast special has been produced by Aditi Unnikrishnan of the multimedia desk here at The National. You can follow them on Twitter at NSVUAE, or follow us on Sport at NatSportUAE, or on the website at www.thenational.ae/sport.